I'll just go on now, assuming everybody's here. And I'm going to talk about performance, and I'm going to talk about profiling and performance optimization. Let me say a bit about myself. My name is Søren Sandman, and you can call me Søren Sandman if that's easier to pronounce. I have been a contributor to GTK and glib and Pango since around 1999. I think that's the first time my name actually appears in one of the changelogs. I'm a student at Aarhus University, so when I'm not working on GTK, I'm supposed to be writing my master's thesis, and hopefully I'll graduate at the end of the year. An outline of what I'm going to talk about today. Does performance even matter? Of course it does, but why? And I'm going to talk about how to design your program to perform well. Some people will say that you shouldn't worry about performance before you actually have a working program, but I don't think that's quite true. You have to think about it before even starting your program. And then there's the easy five-step solution to fast programs, and I'm going to talk about that. And one of the five steps is about measuring the speed of your program, and that's quite trivial with the time program, but in some cases actually figuring out what to measure is not quite as easy as that. One of the steps is actually profiling your program, and the two profilers that I'm going to spend most time on is K-CacheGrind, which is a front-end to Valgrind, a front-end to a special skin to Valgrind, and SpeedProf, which is a version of MemProf, which is a memory profiler, but modified so it will profile time instead of memory. That's not the only possibilities, though, because you can also use more low-tech solutions like GDB or the GTimer data structure, which is essentially a stopwatch that you can use from within your program. And you can also use S-Trace, which is a program that will list all the system calls your application is doing. So what do you do to actually make things faster? Well, you'll have to pull out a bag of clever tricks. Anything goes, really, as long as you are measuring to make sure that that the tricks actually work. And future work, that's just I'm just going to talk about a few things I'd like to do with SpeedProf. So does it matter? Computers are really, really fast, of course, and they get faster all the time. But for some reason, software doesn't seem to be keeping up, actually. It doesn't seem to be. If computers really were that fast, why isn't the software extremely fast? And it isn't, actually. So don't computers double every 18 months? Yeah, we all know. We all know that that the famous Moore's law, that the number of transistors double every 18 months, and that's pretty much a myth. There's an article in a web magazine called First Monday that demonstrates that it's pretty much bogus, that law, actually. But people still keep quoting it, and I don't think it's actually true, basically. Computers do get faster, but not exponentially, especially not if you consider things like memory bandwidth or bandwidth to disks, which definitely not get faster as exponentially faster. And we all know that when you buy a new computer, it seems really fast, but then after 2 weeks, it's just as slow as the old one. That's strange, of course, because your computer does not get magically slower in those 2 weeks. And I think the explanation is actually that as long as the response to something you do is not within at 1/10 of a second, then it will seem slow when you get used to it. As long as it's not perceived to be an immediate response, then it will seem slow when you get used to it. The GNOME Human Interface Guidelines suggest that responses to everything that requires hand-eye coordination, like pushing a mouse button or moving a window or anything really that where you expect the computer to react immediately, should actually happen within 1/10 of a second. So I said that designing for performance is actually important. And if your program is going to need high throughput to be actually really fast, not just responsive, then make sure to do all the right things. You should encapsulate all data structures and use all the layers you can get, because the reason you do all this stuff is not just to just because it's the right thing. It improves the flexibility of your application so that you can quickly change it around to do something else than it originally did. And that's important when you figure out that it's too slow. So if you actually start out by making your application a big monolithic program, then chances are that you will make it a big monolithic slow program that you can't really change later. So one of the things you're supposed to do is make accesses for your data structures. And that means using function calls instead of directly accessing through a pointer the data. And I'll tell you more about that, why that's a good idea. Actually, even though you might think that directly accessing the data should be faster than calling a function. And just make sure it's possible. Do not worry about actually implementing all the fast algorithms until later. So I said that a mouse click that the application should respond to things like mouse clicks within 1/10 of a second, but now I'll correct that to 50 milliseconds, because I actually think that's more realistic. One tenth of a second is actually noticeable. So one thing that impacts the design of your application is the main data structure. If you're having a database of things you are going to if your application is somehow built on top of a database, then make sure all the data is stored in a fast data structure. Do not expect to be able to iterate through all your data if you have a lot of it in 50 milliseconds. So if you're going to need to find an object when you click on a button, say, then you need some kind of tree structure or a hash table, or your application will not scale. And one of the great theorems from computer science is that login is less than 50 milliseconds for all in. And I think that's basically true unless you do something really inefficient. So if you can put all your data in a balanced tree, you should be fine. And again, accessing your data through functions makes it easy to swap out entire data structures. So you should think of performance as a feature in its own right. It's a feature that you cannot add to a program if you haven't designed the program to actually be capable of performing. And it's a special feature in that it's something you will add at the end of when you actually have a working program, but still a feature that you need to design to take that you need to take into account when you're designing your program. So the conclusion is you should worry about performance when you're designing your program. Feel free to interrupt me with questions if you have any. So, next slide. More about designing. The GNOME Human Interface Guidelines also have some guidelines for making your program responsive. And one of the things the interface guidelines recommends is showing feedback. And a lot of studies have, some studies have shown that if you display feedback to a user when some calculation is going on that's going to take a while, then they will actually think the program is faster than it really is. So even if the showing the feedback will make it actually slower, it will seem faster. And the reason for that is, time flies when you're having fun, and you're having more fun if a blue progress bar is progressing. So another thing is to prioritize what you're doing, and to prioritize, that means you're going to, if something is going to be interesting to the user, then prioritize that above something that's not going to be interesting. So a garbage collection, if you have a garbage collector in your application, is not going to be interesting to the user, but displaying a web page is going to be interesting. So prioritize the entertainment above the non-entertaining parts of your program. You can also show approximate results. If you can generate half a web page, then you want to show that so the user is entertained while the rest of the web page is being displayed. And if you can't display the whole web page, then just fake a web page. No way. If you can somehow fake what's going to happen without actually doing it, then that might be a good idea. If you are going to add new data to a database, then just pretend they are added and just show them on the screen without actually doing the expensive adding to the database. You can do that later when the user isn't looking. Use dynamic time management. That's really just prioritize again. But in a GTK application, you want to make use of the event loop, the glib event loop. It actually has a lot of features for prioritizing subtasks. You can actually do very fine-grained scheduling with the glib event loop. Read chapter 7 of the Human Interface Guidelines. You should actually read the entire guideline, but especially chapter 7 about responsive applications. More about responsiveness. The user's time is more important than the computer's time. So if the user is going to do something like clicking with the mouse or moving a window around, then you want to prioritize that about something that's doing a background calculation. You can sacrifice a lot of real performance for responsiveness, because as long as the user sees that things are happening when he interacts with the application, he'll be fine, even if it's actually taking longer to complete. 50 milliseconds, I've said that once or twice already. I've said that already, but one way to check if your application is actually living up to that is running strace-tt-e poll. And that means strace will list all the calls to poll that your application is making. A call to poll is necessary for the application to read events off the X connection, and you can't of course respond to a user event if you don't know it's there, and that means there can't be any more than 50 milliseconds between two consecutive calls to poll. If there is, then you actually have a problem. Then your application is not HIPAA compliant. So the interface guideline says 100 milliseconds or 1/10 of a second, but I don't think that's actually too long. If you click on a button and it doesn't appear depressed before 1/10 of a second, then it will feel sluggish. It will feel like something is going on and the application is somehow not paying attention. When that happens, I have actually found myself pushing harder on the mouse button until I realize what I'm doing. Yeah. Dynamic time management. If you have some expensive computation, you will want to not clog up the event loop, as I said, and you need to return control to glib every 50 milliseconds. And one way to do that is to install an idle handler, and you use the call gidle add or gidle add full that allows you to also give a priority. And then in the idle handler, you will do one step of your computation, and then check if 50 milliseconds has passed, and if it has, then return true, which means basically, please call me again at a later time. When you do that, control will return to the event loop, and more events will be read off the X connection, and your idle handler will be called later. This is a bit complicated to do. It's, well, not complicated, but tedious to do. But it's worth it, I think. You'll have to do that. You'll have to keep the entire state of your computation in a context structure. So the basic template is allocate a structure that contains all necessary state for the computation to work. So if you're computing pi to a million digits, then you want to keep the digits you have already computed in a context structure, and then let the glib event loop call you every 50 milliseconds. If you actually have an expensive calculation going on, then you will want to allow the user to stop it. You'll probably have a progress bar with a cancel button, and if you're actually doing your computation in an idle handler, it's easy to cancel it. Just have the cancel button store a boolean stop in your context structure, and the next time your idle handler is called, you will see if that bit is set, and if it is, stop the computation. So 50 milliseconds, that's enough to be responsive, fairly responsive at least, but it's more than a typical screen will refresh, than a typical screen refresh rate. So if you really care about making your application seem fast, then it's actually too much, because one of the things that GTK will do in the when you return control is actually repaint the window you have. So if you drag another window across your application and you don't give control back to GTK for 50 milliseconds, well then 50 milliseconds will go on without repainting anything. So if that's important, then you might want to decrease the amount of time before returning control to something like 10 milliseconds, which is on the order of a screen refresh. Why Thread sucks? Yeah. I'm not a big fan of threads, because they will introduce weird bugs that only show up on other people's computers, because if you introduce a race condition, then it will probably work fine on your computer, but when somebody runs it on a 2 CPU machine or whatever else, some kind of different hardware, then the race condition will show up and you'll have no way to debug it, because you don't know how to reproduce it and you can't reproduce it on your own computer. They will impose logging throughout all the libraries. They will have to log before when entering malloc or free, and they will have to log whenever they access any form of global state. It's not a big deal, probably, but still there. The overhead. Worse, you have no way of controlling the priorities if you're using POSIX threads. A POSIX threads, there is some call that allow you to set the priority of a thread, but it doesn't really work unless you are root, which you generally aren't. And even if you are root, it uses, at least the Linux implementation is uses some kind of Linux-specific hack, so you cannot, in general, rely on priorities being portable. Which, that's not the case if you're using the idle handlers, because the glib event loop will actually allow you to set priorities. There's no good way of stopping a thread if there's a call called pthread cancel. But are you really sure what happens if you call pthread cancel when your thread is in a system call? Maybe the system call will return something unexpected, and your program will not know how to deal with that. Also, if the thread is holding a mutex, what happens? That's not actually undefined, I think. So pthread cancel is really difficult to use correctly if it can't be used correctly at all. For input-output to disk, there's unfortunately no real good alternative to using threads, because you can't do non-blocking I/O with the disks. So you'll have to rely on some sort of threading scheme or multiple process scheme, and you cannot rely on disk system calls returning immediately, because stuff like NFS will block pretty much indefinitely if the connection to the network file server is slow. Another problem with threads is that you are at the mercy of the kernel scheduler, so you will have to rely on the kernel scheduler being able to reverse engineer what's actually going on. And that's pretty difficult for it to do, because when it sees a threat that's really CPU intensive, then it might want to schedule that threat for a while, or at least when it schedules that threat, give it a long time slice, which will harm the interactive performance. And you have no way of hinting to the kernel so about what's going on. And of course, Linux is supposed to have a good threat. It's a good scheduler now, but not all kernels will be as good as that. So avoid threats if you can. And I know this is a somewhat controversial thing to say, but there it is. So, how to make your program fast in 5 easy steps. You want to measure what's going on so you have something to compare with, because you can't rely on your being able to judge by just trying it. You're not going to be good at that, because maybe if you think it's fun to do optimizations, then time will fly. And when you have a measurement that shows how fast your application was before, then you want to run a profiler to find out what is it actually doing, your application. What is it actually spending its time on? And when you know that, then you want to understand exactly what the program is doing. If you wrote the program, then hopefully you'll understand what it's doing, although that's not guaranteed always, I know. But if you don't wrote it, then you'll have to study the code, actually, to figure out what's going on. You can't rely on the profiler itself to show where to apply your optimizations. Then you'll have to pull some clever trick, and that's the 2 question marks. I'll get back to what you can actually do later, but for now, I'll just say again that anything goes. And then measure to make sure that whatever you did actually worked. So measuring, how fast was it before? Some optimizations may seem to improve things, where they actually don't. Maybe some cache effect or something else. So maybe you transferred CPU time to disk time or whatever. It's often unpredictable exactly what an optimization will do, so you'll have to actually do the measurements to find out if it works. and you can't rely on your intuition. And if you think it feels faster, well, that's just not a good idea to rely on. So, profile to find out where time goes. Sometimes you'll have a really, really slow application and you don't have a good profile or whatever. Your libraries wasn't compiled with debugging symbols or whatever. And sometimes they're just starting the application in GDB, go to the place where it's spending a lot of time, not doing anything seemingly, and then just press Control C to get a backtrace to see what's going on. That's probably the most low-tech form of profiling you can do, but it's actually very effective sometimes. You can do S-trace to figure out what system calls your application is doing, or you can use a real profiler. You can use KCasgrind, which is a KDE program that's a front end to a Valgrind skin called CallTree. And you can use SpeedProf, which is the modified version of MemProf. And you can use other profilers, but that's all I'm going to say about that. Doing something clever, you can do you can improve the algorithm. Maybe you are having an maybe you're using an O of n squared algorithm that you can easily turn into a linear algorithm. That's what's really going to matter usually, if you can if you actually have the possibility of improving the algorithm. Another possibility is to optimize the common case. If the application is doing the same thing over and over, and it can actually do a whole lot of things, but it's only doing one thing all the time, then you want to optimize for that. You can use caching to trade memory for speed. Sometimes just a little memory can make a big difference, and sometimes it won't have a lot of effect, depending on if the working set of the application is small. You can do lazy calculations. That means not calculating anything before it's actually needed. So sometimes you'll have all sorts of side effects to something your program is doing, and well, nobody really cares about those side effects. So you can just calculate them when somebody cares. Copy and write is a special kind of lazy calculation. You do the if you are usually copying values around. If you're copying stuff around by value, then you might not actually need to copy, because you can just reuse the same thing that you were copying. You can reuse that and only do the actual copying when it's needed. So that's a form of lazy calculation. And then measure again. My favorite method of profiling is SpeedProf. I will actually get into more details about the profiles later. So how do you measure? You can use the time program to find out how long time does it take for your program to finish. But how do you apply time to an interactive program? That's not obvious. You can use the gtimer stuff in glib to have a programmatic stopwatch to find out how long things take. I'll also talk about later appearance versus real speed, and that's essentially I'm going to talk about double buffering and why it's actually a performance improvement in some cases, and why frame rate is not the only metric, useful metric there. So time is only appropriate if you can create a benchmark that accurately reflects what the user is actually going to do. So if you find out that that the time is often spent in some area of your program, then you might be able to create a benchmark that reflects some operation the user will do. It's easy here to get caught up in a wrong benchmark where you are making something that is actually not happening really, really fast. And the reason you're going to do that is that a benchmark is a good thing to have when you're using the time program to measure. If you are confident that the benchmark you created is actually reflecting what the user is doing, then you want to exaggerate that so that other stuff that you have to do that's just part of the benchmark will disappear in the noise. So run it as many times as you can without spinning forever. And tuning to the benchmark is another danger, but really the same thing. If you have created a benchmark that you have created this benchmark, and then you're profiling the benchmark and making the benchmark really, really fast, and it won't have any actual effect on your application. Yeah, an application that flares looks slow, and some people think an application that flares looks slow, and we all know better, of course, because we can measure the frame rate and find out that it's actually not slow, but it looks that way. A flickering application is slow in a sense if you're just using the right metric, because if you are drawing something that flickers when you are, say, resizing a window or a list view, and you're not double buffering, then you will draw first the background and it will appear totally white. Then you'll draw all the text, and then finally maybe you'll draw the selection in the list. All that stuff means that you're actually drawing mostly wrong pixels. And the question is, are you really drawing fast if the pixels you draw are slow? Well, what is a wrong pixel then? A wrong pixel is a pixel that's not what the user would want it to be, or it's not the pixel that will eventually be there if you let the application finish. So actually, the minute you move the mouse, then a lot of pixels will be wrong at that point. A more useful metric for drawing speed is to plot the number of wrong pixels as a function of time. So if this is time going out here, and this is the number of wrong pixels here, and a better metric than frame rate possibly is simply to integrate this curve to find out the area here, reflecting what number of pixels are actually wrong, because that's what users care about. So that's really difficult actually to measure, and frame rate is probably a good approximation in the real world. But if you consider a list where most of the pixels are actually the same, and you are redrawing the whole list, then you will actually replace right pixels with wrong pixels if you're not double buffering. And so double buffering can be an actual performance gain if you use the right metric. So that's just to illustrate that measuring, finding the right metric is not always obvious. Profile. Profiles will, if you're using a real profiler, then they will generally give you a list of numbers and functions, and they'll give you two numbers often. They'll give you the number of self time, and that's the amount of time actually spent executing a function. So you have a function called foo, maybe, that's spending some percentage of the time, and some percentage of the time is spent actually inside foo. They'll also give you a number called total or cumulative, and that's the number of that's the amount of time spent in foo and its children. So if you if the self number is high, then you want to actually look at the code of the function and see if it's doing something stupid or something, perhaps not stupid, but optimizable. And if the cumulative number is high, then you want to look at improving the algorithms that the function is actually implementing, because a high cumulative number means that what's going on in that part of the program is slow. So the main function of your program will generally be spending 100% of the time. So if you can optimize that away, then you will be good. yes. One thing you need to be careful about with the self column is that it depends on the representation of the program. If the function is, say you have a function that 90% of the time is spent inside, well, then why not break it up into 10 sub-functions, each spending 9% of the time, then your performance problem will be solved, right? Of course not. If you're assuming that function calls are free, which is generally a safe assumption, then the program has not changed at all. But the self-column has changed a lot, and it looks entirely different. So that's one caveat with the self numbers. They are not independent of the representation of the program. So be careful with those. In general, the total column is much more useful, because it cannot be tampered with. You might not, of course, you wouldn't want to take. Of course, you wouldn't want to kid yourself by taking the 90% function and break it up just to have it appear different on the profiler. But you may have done that already, because, well, maybe you just broke the function into smaller function because to make the code more readable. And the total number doesn't have that. Had that property, it can't be tampered with as easily. So, in general, I recommend looking at the total column before looking at the self column. Right. So a profiler is not a stopwatch. The numbers that appear on the profile does not correspond to any idea of how fast the program itself is. So if you're making some kind of change and then observing that the function has gone from 90% of the time to 40% of the time, and then assume, oh, then it must be much, much faster, that doesn't have any, that doesn't work, because you can have done all sorts of things. Is there a question? No. You can have done all sorts of things that that might have affected the actual performance. You might, for example, have moved some time from the CPU to the memory bandwidth, to the memory bus, or to the or spending more time reading stuff off the disk. So in general, you cannot use the profiler to as a stopwatch. You want to measure real wall clock time, because that's what users will care about. Yeah. I've already said that. Yeah, S-trace is an easy way to find out if something completely stupid is going on, if you are loading everything over and over. Gtimer can be used to confirm that if you have an idea what's going on, then Gtimer can be used to confirm or deny that's what's going on. KCasGrind. KCasGrind is a KDE program, a front end to a Valgrind skin called CallTree. The way Valgrind works is that it takes your program, your binary file, and then actually interprets it, generating new machine code and running that. So it takes your program and translates it into an instrumented machine code, and it runs much, much, much slower than the real binary. That's a real problem, because if it runs 200 times slower, which it actually does sometimes, then you can't profile an interactive program, because the program will simply be unusable. And you will also be tempted to use two small samples, so caching schemes will not have a chance to work. So it can be useful if you have a small self-contained benchmark that you can either afford to run for a long time, or that somehow it doesn't take too long to run. One of the neat features of KCasGrind is that it has a fancy call graph visualization, which should be on the next slide, I believe. Yeah, here's an impressive example of KDE technology. What's going on here is all those squares are actually function calls, and if you hover with the mouse over one of the rectangles, you'll see the trace that led to that particular call. It's a very useful way of visualizing what's going on. If you see one big rectangle, then it means a lot of time is going there. So, well, it's very useful, but of course this front end can't be any more useful than the data it gets. And I'm afraid, in my experience, the Valgrind skin is not always, the data is not always that reliable. And it's difficult to get interesting data. A good thing about it is Valgrind doesn't actually profile. It doesn't enter system calls, so they will just not appear. on the profiles it generates. If you're not doing any, if you're profiling just the CPU, some CPU intensive task, then that's not a big problem. But real world applications are not just CPU intensive. It doesn't make any special demands on programs, so it works best if you actually have symbols. Otherwise, you'll just get question marks, and it's not useful to know that a lot of time is spent executing question mark. So it doesn't actually tell the truth. It doesn't tell about the system calls. It does definitely not tell the whole truth, because it doesn't care about input-output at all. And, well, it shouldn't be lying, though. So it tells nothing but the truth. The speedbug profiler. Memprof is a memory profiler written by Ohm. And it works by preloading a library using the Linux and Solaris feature called LD preload, which means that you can take over a symbol. So if the symbol is, say, malloc, which it is in this case, then preloading a library that has the symbols malloc and free defined already will make the application call Sorry, I have now minus 1 minute to go. Right. Right. The biggest problem with memprof, as it is, if you check it out of CVS, is that the times reported in case of recursion are completely bogus. If you have 10 recursive calls nested inside each other, then each recursive call will contribute to the total of that function, which means that you can have it report that 10,000% of the time is spent inside one highly recursive function. And there's a patch that I made that corrects that problem, and also this is a screenshot here, that allows you to break down what a function is spending its time on. So what we see here is the function addEngines from somewhere deep inside Pango, which is spending a lot of time. You can see that here, that it's actually spending a lot of time, because 353 should be seen in relation to the number of samples actually taken. So what you can see here is a breakdown of what that function is actually doing, and you can see it spends about less than half, but a significant chunk of time on loading font sets and calling gobject unref. And what's going on here is that Pango is creating font sets. Pango represents a font as a set of fonts, because it needs to display a lot of symbols that aren't that may be available across a lot of fonts. So it has to generate font sets. And what's going on here is that it will spend a lot of time actually generating those font sets. And the solution to this particular problem was to add a caching scheme to Pango, so that font sets were not generated but reused, because you're generally using no more than two or three fonts on an application. Yeah, optimize the common case. If you use all the right algorithms and the code doesn't look like it could be tuned to do anything really fast, then you might want to instrument the program to find out what is the actual common case it's spending its time on. If it's if you have a subsystem that can sing and dance, but all it does is actually dance with polka, then you want to optimize for polka dancing. So you need extra measurements. You need to instrument your application to find out how much exactly is spent on polka dancing. So the template is available on the slide. Copy and write. If you're copying, if you have an object that's logically a value that you can copy around, then it may make sense to add a copy and write scheme. And the general idea is to actually use another level of indirection. You'll have an internal structure that's reference counted, and the real object will just be a pointer to will just contain a pointer to the reference counted internal object. Then when you're copying the object, just copy it and increase the reference count. If somebody wants to modify a copy of the object and you see that the reference count is more than one, well, then you do the real copying and reset the reference count to one. If actually modifying the copied objects is not a common thing to do, then this can improve performance quite a bit. Tune the code. That's not interesting, generally. Yeah. Well, something I'd like to do later on is to add a kernel module to SpeedProf, because a problem with both KCasgrind and SpeedProf is that they don't measure more than one program at the more than one application at the time. So if you have an application that's drawing stuff on the screen using the X server, then you can't know just using a profiler if the time is spent inside the application or inside X. Maybe you'll find that 90% of the time of your application is spent inside some function, and you'll go optimize that and find out that it doesn't matter because 90% of the actual time is spent inside the X server. So what you're actually seeing is 90% of 10%. So what I'd like to do is create a kernel module, and I actually have created most of it, that will allow you to, that will make it possible to profile the entire system. Yeah, and the KCasgrind style graph view could be useful too. I made these slides using Python TTK, which is an excellent presentation to me. I promised Johan that I would display an advertisement here. So that's basically it, unless there are any questions. Yeah, Alex? Yeah, everything is going through these signals.
Yeah, they are. But they're not actually like, just happens to be the signal. And you need to just doing that part of you.
Yeah.
All as the signal handler is handling.
That's another thing. Yeah.
That's
So glib has signals which are essentially a fancy way of calling functions. And if signal handlers call each other, then it will appear that G signal emit is highly recursive when it's actually not really interesting what's going on there. And so you're asking what to... Yes. Well, the speed profiler with the patch that I mentioned will actually show the descendants of the G signal will actually be will actually show where the time is spent there. So that could actually that's actually useful, I think, as something. But it would also be useful to have a way of ignoring simply saying this is a way to call a function. It's not a recursion or anything. Yeah, that would be another useful thing to do. Okay. Any other questions? No. Thank you.